Welcome to the Closing the Gap podcast series, brought to you by BrandHook and CMO Magazine.
I'm Pip Stocks, and I'm your host for Closing the Gap, an 11-part series about how marketers can close the gap between what consumers want and what business is delivering.
The digital transformation is upon us, yet 74% of senior executives around the world state their understanding of the customer experience as incomplete. This series gives marketers practical ways to build that knowledge.
My guest for Chapter 8 is John Broome, the Marketing Director for ANZ for Kellogg's. John has spent a lot of his marketing life in FMCG and interestingly started his career in pharma. Hi, John.
Hello. Good to be here, Pip.
Thanks, John. Almost half of what we do every day is the same. BrandHook did a study that recognised habitual behaviour. And we know that brands can be a habitual choice in this world. And because of that, they need to really develop an intuitive bond with their consumers. This is really the fifth way that we're addressing the closing the gap issue with how business and consumers now need to come closer together because of this digital world. And it's called the importance of building an intuitive bond. But before we talk about that, John, tell me how an FMCG company like Kellogg's can really develop meaning to their consumers in this digital world.
Yeah, Pip, I think I would use the phrase brand purpose. And I know there's a lot being spoken about around brand purpose recently, but I think it is really a great way of unlocking emotional affinity between your brand and a consumer, very much on a kind of like a one-to-one relationship basis. It feels, you know, to the consumer that they've got that direct relationship with the brand. And I think it's a tough task. You can't necessarily do it on every brand, but certainly on the ones that drive your business, I think it's very, very important to do. So we do it particularly, for example, on Nutrigrain and Special K as two of our biggest brands.
The Special K stuff's been around a long time, hasn't it, and that connection?
Yeah, it has. And we are in the process of, I guess, transforming the purpose on Special K away from, I guess, that diet food perception that it has today, which is based on how it used to engage with consumers, you know, over the past two or three decades. You know, the woman in the red dress, for example, being as an iconic, you know, point of distinctiveness for the brand, more towards supporting women's inner strength and, you know, through positive nutrition. Now that's a journey, and you know we've just embarking on that, or started that journey last year, and it will take some time, but you know you have to be absolutely focused on it and consistent with it.
Do you think with a brand like Special K that the way that you're talking to these women has changed over the last 5 years because of this evolution that we're in?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, women today want to celebrate who they are as individuals. And the old world of putting in front of them a picture of what they should be can be extremely alienating for women. And so therefore, brands need to show much, much greater empathy with women today.
And the digital world's really good at that. It's a great channel for empathy, isn't it?
Yeah, gives you great scope. And whereas, you know, not forgetting that we are in the business of mass marketing, you know, we literally do have to sell millions and millions of packs. And, you know, we have to sell constantly. We don't have cycles that we go through. We don't have batches of, you know, that then we can stop at a certain point. Basically, our messaging has to be constant. So that basically enables, well, digital enables you to do that, let's put it that way.
Yes.
And also to tailor messaging to actually put variety into that messaging too.
As I said, we've done a study at BrandHook about habitual behaviour. And you've just said that, you know, as a mass market brand, you need to drive volume.
Yeah.
How do you deal with habitual behaviour at Kellogg's?
Okay. So We obviously know roughly how often our consumers buy a pack of cereal. We can do that by brand. So there's this purchase cycle concept. We also know that consumers see cereals as a repertoire category. People don't typically have one brand in the cupboard. They maybe have three or four. So this is why, for example, you've got brands that may have penetration of, say, 15, 20, 25%, but market share of only, say, 5 or 6%.
Mm.
And that's because, you know, the box is in the cupboard, but it's not being replenished as frequently. So we can also never predict precisely when that next purchase is going to be. So therefore, we have to be always on, and reinforcing our points of distinctiveness, having that, driving that mental availability in people's minds constantly, so that when that box of Special K or Nutri-Grain or whatever Sultana brand runs out, and they typically just write cereal on the shopping list and then go into store, and that we then have that point of interruption in store, be it just simply our pack, mental availability combines with physical availability, and as a result we get the purchase.
You just want them to grab it, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is, consumers, shoppers don't think too much about it, to be honest.
No.
And the pre-existing memory structures really work well to drive that habitual, purchase.
It's interesting you talk about repertoire shopping, because we do a lot of work in retail, and one of the bits of work we did with the department store, we're actually able to measure them and their competitors in different categories, women's wear, children's wear, and where they sat in the repertoire.
Yeah.
And our big thing was, let's not worry necessarily about being number one. Let's just worry about being in the repertoire, because that's how you'll grow your market share in the first instance.
Yeah.
And then obviously you want to try and be one and two. You want to get in that cycle.
Absolutely. So I think, certainly in FMCG, the greater the penetration that you have, the slightly greater frequency of purchase that you also have. So the two kind of like go together equally.
Mm.
Lower penetration brands tend to have slightly lower frequency of purchase. So you're right, once you're in, great, but then you have to climb that ladder.
Yeah. The Amazon Dash stuff's quite interesting. You know, the buttons, I don't know if you've seen it, but if you're an Amazon Premium member in the States, you'll get, they'll send, I think you pay $5 for them, but you get a button, and it's called, it's just called Amazon Dash, and it's so far for all sorts of things. You know, the Gillette are doing it, the laundry detergents are doing it, and you put the button next to the product, and when you need to replenish, you press the button. Just in case your kids have done it by mistake, it goes to your phone,
right,
as a little, did you really order this?
Yeah.
And then you go yes.
Yeah.
And then 24 hours later, your laundry detergent has been delivered to your door.
Love the idea.
Love it. Isn't that fantastic?
Fantastic. Wouldn't it be fantastic if it was available here in Australia?
Yeah, I reckon you'd be the first ones to do
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. We'd jump on board. Yeah.
So, John, reducing the complexity and building a powerful customer experience, we think is really key in that intuitive bond with your consumers. You kind of touched on it already a bit about building that connection, but how do you build that bond with your consumer, knowing that you don't own that space that you're in, or that you're in a grocery department store?
Yeah. So look, I think it's the driving distinctiveness with your brand, so that you embed yourself in the memory structures of your consumer. And I think my advice there is that we obviously have the choice between functional attributes and emotional benefits. And I think the strongest way to do it, on a most sustained, enduring way, is to lean more towards the emotional benefits. Functional things, I've got more of this than that, or the competitor B or whatever it happens to be, don't tend to be remembered by consumers, certainly not in the grocery FMCG space. And of course, they're very easily copied. When it comes to establishing emotional affinity, there's a lot more uniqueness that you can bring into play here, and you can drive a lot stronger level of distinctiveness, through mental availability. Good example for us would be the recent activation on Nutri-Grain, where we wanted to translate our new brand purpose, fueling unstoppability, into reality. And We did that by basically inspiring teens through amazing true life stories of guys who have overcome incredible adversity to achieve their dreams.
Mm.
Whether it's a blind surfer from Brazil, Derek Rebello, Nathan Charles, the rugby Wallabies rugby player for Australia, who quietly overcame cystic fibrosis to play for his country. These are amazing, amazing, inspiring stories. And what it does is it basically inspires teen boys with where the brand has a role to play within that inspiration, because it's basically providing fuel to become unstoppable.
And you said that in the past, you said that mothers are worried about their teenage boys.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So we actually teamed up with ReachOut.com and did some research with teens, but also with mums. And mum, in her role as provider, is, you know, always concerned that, you know, her teen boy, as he grows up, becomes more independent, potentially goes off the rails or whatever, or whether it's simply, you know, I wish he'd get off the couch and stop playing video games.
Mm.
I wish he would stop procrastinating, for example. You know, seeing boys that are motivated by inspiring stories is good. You know, it's great for mum too.
Mm.
What we've subsequently found is that when we engage with teens in such a way, we drive what's called team request. So, you know, teen boys are asking mum, you know, make sure Nutri-Grain's in the house or whatever. And that obviously translates through to purchase.
I've got an 8 and 9 year old boy who are doing the same thing. So obviously that's good. I don't know if they've seen it on the computer though, but I wouldn't be surprised. They are ferreting around at different things.
That's
one
right.
of them will watch football for hours online.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So, you know, this is where programmatic comes in a big way, where we firmly believe that essentially online video, which is, you know, the real battleground now for eyeballs, particularly with teen boys, it's essentially a paid game, so you are seeding content. The content itself has to be, you know, great to truly engage, but to get in front of the eyeballs in the first place, it's not about sharing, certainly not in the mass scale that we need. It really is about paid, and we've used programmatic to unlock that opportunity.
It's interesting because when I worked in London. You know, I always say this and it makes me a bit frightened. About 18 years ago, I think, I was at one of the agencies and P&G were our big client.
Mm.
And Lafley was there the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about emotional advertising. Mm. It was that big shift from, because, you know, we had all the detergents, but we also had the fragrance business.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting because we kind of led the way, because there's no functional benefit difference between any fragrance.
Yeah.
It's all about emotional differences.
Yeah.
And it does sometimes surprise me that we still have these conversations, you know, about the importance of emotional connection.
Yeah, and look, you know, you still need to have your boots firmly on the ground, because what I'm looking for is emotional affinity that drives your brand's distinctiveness.
Yes.
If your brand's distinctive, it's driving what we call a mental availability.
Mm.
That in turn, coupled with physical availability, will drive, you know, business growth through penetration. You know, you will attract more light and lapsed users to your brand, which is how our brands basically grow.
Mm.
Of course, we want to keep all our heavy users happy, but, you know, just keeping them happy is not good enough. Yes, I need to re-recruit them, but I also need to bring new people into my brand. And the strongest way to do that is emotional affinity driving distinctiveness.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And the heavy users, we would talk about just the triggers and cues to encourage the habit.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's more habitual happiness, you know, almost kind of like safe predictability. For a heavy user around your brand, as long as you're not disappointing them.
Yes.
As long as you're not kind of like,
or not disrupting the habit.
Exactly. Or eroding anything that is positively working for them.
Yeah.
On the brand, whether it's taste, memory structures, you know, the fact that it's available at their local store or whatever it happens to be. As long as you're kind of like maintaining that, then you can then put your focus on, well, how do I bring more new users?
Yeah.
Or how do I bring more lapsed users back into my brand?
And the intuitive bond is there with those heavy users, so it's creating that with the light ones.
Yeah.
We're nearly done. I suppose what I'm interested in now is, which brands do you think do that intuitive bond well, that real connection well, out of category or anywhere?
Yeah, yeah. I'm very impressed with what, and it's a long story now, but what BMW have done with the Mini brand. They basically took what was a very clear proposition in the car industry, a clear brand identity, but it was grounded, in the 70s. And obviously, the old British company that owned Mini discontinued the mark. But the marketers at BMW have essentially taken all what was great, all the positives from let's say again, that emotional and affinity with the brand, plus all the kind of like the functional quirks of the brand, and contemporized it for the 20th century and now the 21st century. So the fact that Mini, in my mind, truly does deliver on excitement when it comes to, individuality in buying cars, is fantastic. And yes, okay, they've put more luxury fittings into it. It's a bigger chassis. It was probably goes faster. Yes, you can actually order whatever color you like. Different designs and
bit of customization.
Customization, exactly, which is a big build. From where it was in the 70s.
And made a new movie.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think is a great example of drive or re-driving or re-engaging around an emotional connection with a car.
So I suppose to wrap up, the intuitive bond, the discussions we've had around the office is about the effortless experience and mapping out that customer experience. But really what you're saying is that it's the added touch of the emotional bit, the engagement through the distinctive, the emotional codes and the distinctiveness that you can deliver really actually is what creates that intuitive bond.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the opportunity for brands in the FMCG space is exactly that. And it doesn't have to be done in the old way. You don't necessarily have to pile into 30-second TV copy, and big TV campaigns to do it. There are many, many small manufacturers who are doing it very differently and succeeding along exactly the same model. So, whether you're a big FMCG player or a small FMCG player, you can play to the same rules.
Great. Thank you, John.
Pleasure.
Thanks to everyone listening. I think, the intuitive bond is an interesting topic and we'll keep talking about that. Next week we've got Sandra Arango, who's the head of marketing at Heinz, who we've been doing a lot of work with, and we're going to talk about the sixth closing the gap method, iterative collaboration.